Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Reconsidering Nevada versus Hall Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On January 9th, 2019, the Supreme Court heard argument in Franchise Tax Board of California versus Hyatt, a case considering whether one state may, without its consent, be sued by a private citizen in another state's courts. In the 1990s, Gilbert Hyatt moved from California to Nevada. Following an investigation and audit, however, the Franchise Tax Board of California, FTB, claimed that he had misstated the date of his move and therefore owed California millions in unpaid taxes, penalties, and interest. Hyatt then brought a tort suit against FTB, which is a California state agency, in Nevada state court, and won a jury verdict of nearly $500 million. Although the Nevada Supreme Court set aside much of the award on appeal, it nevertheless affirmed an award of $1 million for fraud, even though a Nevada statute would have capped such damages in a similar suit against Nevada officials at $50,000. Nevada's interest in providing adequate redress to its own citizens, the court concluded, superseded the application of any statutory cap for California's benefit. California sought review in the U.S. Supreme Court, urging it to overrule the 1979 decision Nevada versus Hall, which held that one state's courts could adjudicate a private citizen's lawsuit against another state without the second state's consent. The Supreme Court granted certiorari, but split 4-4 on the issue, which resulted in a technical affirmance of the Nevada Supreme Court's exercise of jurisdiction. Reaching the merits, the court held by a vote of 6-2 that the U.S. Constitution did not permit Nevada to apply a rule of Nevada law that awarded damages against California greater than it could award against Nevada in similar circumstances. On remand, the Nevada Supreme Court reissued its vacated opinion, except as the damages portion, and applied the statutory damages cap for FTB's benefit. FTB again petitioned for certiorari, however, and the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to revisit the issue on which it had previously split 4-4, whether Nevada versus Hall, which permits a sovereign state to be hailed into another state's courts without its consent, should be overruled. And now to discuss the case, we have Stephen Sachs, professor of law at Duke University.
Franchise Tax Board v. Hyatt, or FTB, is one of the most fascinating sovereign immunity cases to reach the court in years. We know that states can claim sovereign immunity in their own courts, and we know that they can sometimes claim it in federal courts. The question this case asks is, do states have a constitutional claim to immunity in other states' courts? That is, can a private person like Gilbert Hyatt sue the Franchise Tax Board of California, the state's equivalent to the IRS, and make them show up in a Nevada court? 40 years ago, in a case called Nevada v. Hall, the Supreme Court said, yes, you can. But sovereign immunity doctrine has changed a lot since Hall, and now there's a real question whether Hall is going to be overruled. This is actually the third time this case between Hyatt and the board has reached the court. It came up in 2003 and then again in 2016. The last time the court split 4-4 on the immunity issue after the death of the late Justice Scalia. Now, though, it's likely the court is finally going to reach a decision one way or the other. The case arose out of a tax dispute between Hyatt, who's an inventor, and the state of California. Hyatt moved from California to Nevada in the early 1990s, but the parties are still arguing in a separate proceeding about when he moved. California has a big income tax and Nevada doesn't, so it matters for how much of his income that year was subject to California taxes. The board started to investigate, and according to Hyatt, they sent agents into the state of Nevada who allegedly committed various torts, looking in his windows, going through his garbage, revealing private facts about him to third parties, and so on. So this case isn't about the tax liability, it's about those alleged torts. Because in 1988, Hyatt sued the California board in Nevada state court and won. He got a judgment of almost $500 million in damages. That judgment has been cut down a lot since, but the parties are still fighting over whether the board has to pay the judgment at all, or whether, because it's an arm of the state of California, the board has sovereign immunity to Hyatt's suit in a Nevada court. What makes the case hard is that there isn't very much constitutional text to look at. The 11th Amendment protects states against suits in federal court, but it doesn't talk about state court suits like this one. At the same time, the founders seem to have recognized a relatively broad immunity for states in other state courts. The question for the court is what kind of immunity that was, what source of law created it, and whether it's still in place today. So in 1781, not long after the Articles of Confederation were signed, a man named Simon Nathan went to a Philadelphia court arguing that Virginia owed him money, and he wanted to attach some Virginia state property, fabric that was going to be made into Revolutionary War uniforms. Virginia's representatives in Philadelphia, including James Madison, were very upset and said that would violate the state's sovereign immunity under the law of nations. And Pennsylvania's governor and its attorney general agreed. They even discussed whether the Pennsylvania sheriff might get arrested if he tried to serve the writ on Virginia's sovereign property. During the debates over ratifying the Constitution, Madison, Hamilton, Marshall, and others all argued that states would keep their traditional immunity when the new federal courts were created. Article 3 waived that immunity for some kinds of suits, like suits between states, but it also talked about suits between U.S. states and the citizens of other states or of other countries. And they argued that this new head of jurisdiction would be read to leave the old rule in place, that states would still be immune to private suits even after the Constitution, because Article 3 didn't overturn that rule. In 1793, a divided Supreme Court in Chisholm versus Georgia went the other way, but its ruling was quickly overturned by the 11th Amendment, which provides, and here I quote, that the judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity, commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state or by citizens or subjects of any foreign state. That amendment is all about federal courts. It's about where the United States' judicial power shall extend. And it's all about suits by citizens of other states. So it leaves open the question, what happens to the parts of the traditional immunity that aren't codified in the 11th Amendment? Did they just disappear in Chisholm? Had they already been abrogated by Article 3? Or are they still there for the states to rely on? About 100 years later, in 1890, the court held in Hans versus Louisiana that the rest of the immunity had not gone away. States still had their traditional immunity to private suits outside the 11th Amendment, such as federal question suits that are brought by their own citizens. And about 100 years after that, in 1996, the court held in Seminole Tribe that Congress couldn't abrogate this immunity using the commerce power. It couldn't force states into federal court. And a few more years after that, in Alden v. Maine, the court held that Congress couldn't use the commerce power to abrogate a state's immunity in its own courts either. It couldn't tell California, for example, that it had to answer a federal question suit in California court. But there is one glaring exception in this line of pro-immunity case law, and that's Nevada versus Hall. Hall said in 1979 that nothing in the 11th Amendment or anywhere else in the Constitution talks about a state's ability to force another state into its courts. The 10th Amendment reserves to the states and the people all powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states. So the argument goes, if the Constitution doesn't say anything about other states' immunity, there's nothing to stop a Nevada court from dragging in California if it wants to. This is the rule that the petitioners in FTB want the court to overrule. And in 2016, the court split 4-4 on the overruling question. Now that Justice Kennedy has left the court and Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh have joined it, there was some expectation that they would, in fact, overrule Hall. At oral argument, Seth Waxman, representing the board, talked about all the practical problems that Hall's rule has created and the ways that having one state court issue judgments against another state could very easily interfere with their ordinary mechanisms of government. The problem is that the board's constitutional argument doesn't have any one precise source in the Constitution. The 11th Amendment and Article 3 are all about federal courts, not state courts. Justices Kagan, Alito, and Kavanaugh all pressed Waxman to find some textual hook on which they could hang the immunity. Because after all, as Justice Breyer noted, if the immunity is just coming from the law of nations and not from the Constitution, well, maybe it isn't so binding. Chief Justice Marshall and Justice Story in cases like the Schooner Exchange or the Santissima Trinidad had said that the international law immunity was a matter for the host nation's consent. If they didn't decide to consent, if they wanted to get rid of it, their courts would have to obey. Waxman responded that the states, when they adopted the Constitution, gave up their right to refuse consent in that way, because they also gave up the different means of retaliating against states who did decline consent, like declaring wars or embargoes and so on. If states can't treat each other as legal strangers anymore, he argued, they also can't abrogate each other's immunity. Justice Kagan was skeptical of this bargain argument, referencing an amicus brief, which, for full disclosure, I submitted with Professor Bode at the University of Chicago. We argued that the Constitution doesn't stop a Nevada court from issuing a judgment against California, but it also doesn't require California or anybody else to listen. The penalty for violating the traditional immunity isn't that your judgment will be overturned by a federal court, it's that everyone else can ignore it and act as if your judgment doesn't even exist. So for the first 100 years after the founding, the Constitution definitely said absolutely nothing about personal jurisdiction. And the way that courts handled personal jurisdiction arguments was to look to traditional rules of international law and then refuse to recognize a judgment that broke those rules. So if Georgia or Maine mailed you a summons and you had no reason to respond, you could just toss it in the trash and know that the default judgment that they issued is going to be ignored by federal courts and by courts of other states. It would just be a piece of waste paper, that one court called it, that merely happens to have a judicial seal on it. The Constitution does guarantee full faith and credit to state judicial proceedings, but that's only if they had power to issue them, only if they had proper jurisdiction. So in this case, the argument goes, a judgment against the California government would violate their traditional immunity rules. Nevada just doesn't have power to make California do what it wants. So they can issue whatever pieces of paper they want, and they won't get overturned, but they also won't be enforceable. Waxman argued that the Constitution implicitly did more than this. He referenced other kinds of structural doctrines that prevent one state from controlling another that today, although perhaps not at the founding, we treat as constitutional matters. So intergovernmental tax immunity, anti-commandeering doctrine, and so on. But he didn't really take on the historical argument on its own grounds. By contrast, Erwin Chemerinsky, who was counsel for Hyatt, stressed Nevada's interest in protecting its own citizens. He argued that interstate comity would encourage state courts to tread lightly when hearing suits against other states. Justices Kavanaugh and Alito, though, as well as the Chief Justice, seemed pretty skeptical that comity would do enough to protect the state's interests here, or really reflected the strength of the founders' expressed commitment to state sovereign immunity. The argument also featured an interesting exchange between Justices Kavanaugh and Breyer on the value of stare decisis, which Kavanaugh said would not protect what he called an egregious case from overruling. If Justice Kavanaugh sees Hall as potentially being in the neighborhood of egregious, then it may well be that Hall will end up overruled. Justice Thomas, as usual, was silent at oral argument, but he presumably already voted to overrule Hall in 2016. Justice Gorsuch also stayed silent, though, and we have no indication as yet of his views. Whichever way the Supreme Court rules in FTB, it'll have to give some account of what kind of law sovereign immunity really is in a case that's not covered by the clear text of the 11th Amendment. That brings up another argument we raised in our amicus brief, which is whether this is such a case and whether the court even has jurisdiction to hear this case at all. When Hyatt filed his suit, we definitely know by that time in 1998, he was a citizen of Nevada and he was suing a defendant that both parties treat as equivalent to the state of California. That's precisely the kind of suit commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state, to which the 11th Amendment says the judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend. So there's a reasonably strong argument that this case is outside the judicial power and that the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction. Acting on that argument, though, would mean revisiting some lines of Supreme Court case law on the waiver of sovereign immunity, on appellate review of state decisions, and so on, which play more than a little fast and loose with the amendment's clear text. That might be nice for the court to revisit them, but it's something that none of the justices seemed, at least openly, inclined to do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.